This is the Divided Kingdom, live tonight on June 4th at Global Star Radio Network. Welcome to this cutting-edge news program many of you have come to know and trust since 2003. I'm Lou Caverly, and my co-host is...
Elizabeth Cuffett Caverly.
We can be heard Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern Time at WWCR.com and Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Also, WWCR's shortwave carries us Wednesdays, 7 p.m., on a frequency of 9.350 megahertz, and Thursdays at 8 p.m. on 4.840 megahertz. And you can hear us, too, Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. Eastern on 7.490 megahertz, and Saturdays at 5 p.m. on 9.350 megahertz.
And we interrupt to say that on Saturday you'd really be hearing two different programs.
That's right. So you can get the
Wednesday program
and the Thursday.
And the Thursday.
That's right. Our program can also be found on KSTARTalkRadio.com, KingdomStarRadio.com, and Liberty Works Radio Network. That is LWRN.net. Last Wednesday's program, May 29th, can be found in our archives at DividedKingdomRadio.com. Again, our website is DividedKingdomRadio.com. This bombshell program had such crucial to our very lives info that we are repeating it once more on our Thursday WWCR 8 p.m. 4.840 megahertz program. One way or another, don't miss this amazing guest interview.
And that date, then, would be, Lou, this Thursday, that the week we're on, and that would be June what?
That would be, I believe, June 6th. If I have my calculations correct, I believe that's accurate. And one way or another, don't miss this amazing guest interview. We never had more listener feedback from any program than this one. Tonight, we start with headline short takes and then move into our program entitled April Baal Sacrifice and More Depravity, Stages of a Civilization Morphing into Evil. So we begin, thanks to one of our faithful listeners up in the New England area. We have from the New York Post, May 29th.
Yes, this is our special Northeast contact.
That's
and we
right.
do thank him with all our hearts. He has been really, really on it for Governor Healey's migrant, what should we say, musical chairs, beginning with those 40 secret shelters. So we really thank him. And yes, what is the latest?
We have the headline from the New York Post. White House looks desperate to bury plot at Virginia base. This is by Todd Benzman. Again, it was Wednesday, May 29th. By refusing repeated chances to answer simple questions about a May 3rd incident at Marine Corps Base Quantico, the Biden administration has essentially confirmed one of America's worst and most politically consequential nightmares related to the ongoing border crisis. Two illegal immigrants just attempted a terror attack on U.S. soil. We know that a Jordanian who illegally crossed the border joined up with another Jordanian who had overstayed his visa and drove a box truck to the gates of Quantico. They claimed to be Amazon delivery drivers and tried to access a site that houses the FBI Training Academy, military officer training schools, military criminal investigations, and intelligence commands. Quick-thinking military police stopped the truck and charged the men with trespassing before turning them over to the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. What happened next? We don't know. Bum on terror ties. The government refuses to say if either of these men was on a terror watch list. If they made any confessions in custody, or even if they are being deported. In fact, authorities didn't even acknowledge the incident until Potomac local news Kelly Silenkowski broke the story. Since then, the White House and ICE have had every opportunity to deny what seems obvious, but they have not done so. Quote, given that it is an active law enforcement matter, I would have to refer you to ICE. And that was the statement by White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. She said that in response to a question from Fox News. She went on to say, I just can't dive into that again because there is a law enforcement matter. And news broadcaster Hawk in May also broke this news early and lamented the lax or non-existent law enforcement agenda concerning the Jordanians.
Yes, Lou, and we do ask our listeners to continue to pray for a miracle for veteran broadcaster Hawk, pardon me, who has what is called by the world terminal lung cancer. We are praying for a miracle that God will restore him completely. And with Hawk exposing this about the Jordanians, there was also another case that shows we're well on our way to the later stages of the article we're going to bring to you soon about how a civilization is changed. It morphs into an evil one. And you see, there are stages. First of all, there is the attack. And then finally, there is the normalization, the acceptance of everything. And we can see that with this conviction of Trump, our Constitution, at least at this moment, is not working. We can see that we are another country. We are a banana republic. We are lawlessness. We may be in pre-invasion terms. Many of you found our documentation of pre-invasion tactics of China very interesting. If you go to our archives for March, and that is DividedKingdomRadio.com, DividedKingdomRadio.com, go in there and you'll want to hear some of those programs documenting this. So along with this, when a country is sold out, the top leaders are sold out, they won't protect their special ops people in the military. So Hawk also told about this. There was an almost assault on the home of a special ops American. And these people who were going to do the takedown had big telescopes, telescopic cameras. They could have shot the children of the special ops man, his family, his wife. It was a terrible thing. It was a near miss. And, of course, nothing much happened. We hear again this lax pickup of people. You know, everything just goes quiet. But we can see that normal, patriotic Americans are under vicious attack, and especially those loyal Americans who are in our services, our armed services, the Marines, all the special ops people. And having said that, we have to then think about another situation. As we record here tonight, we looked at the headline from Newsday, June 4th. German authorities see Islamic extremist motive in Mannheim knife attack. I'll read that again. German authorities see Islamic extremist motive in Mannheim knife attack. And, of course, the article goes on to tell that the policeman who was a victim died from that attack. And again, what I said, I reiterate that we will talk more in a near coming program about whether we are going into the Great Tribulation. And we will talk about this terrible conviction of Trump. What this means. What this means. Is our Constitution dead? We really have to be praying, as we never prayed before, about Jesus Christ to give us mercy and for the Americans to repent. So this latest headline takes us back to something that was going on that many of you don't know about, and it happened on Tuesday night, February 15th of this year. This article is not an article. This is just sort of a recap of what Hawk presented. And in this case, we can see, listeners, there is still hope, because at the lower and the middle levels of our government and of our military services, we have real Americans, Americans who still want to save our country. So apparently on this night, February 15th, there were some strange things going on down there, Highway 71 into Cincinnati, busy highway. You know, people began to see some helicopters overhead. And actually, at 6 p.m., there was a military helicopter, and it was seen flying at about 3,000 feet as it turned into sort of a hospital area. Now, this hospital area is near the University of Cincinnati, where we have some medical special kinds of facilities that use nuclear and radioactive equipment. So this helicopter, you see, what appeared to be doing some kind of surveillance, but there were more helicopters that were hovering at a very slow speed as people were driving there, you see, on Highway 71. So we don't know, but we think that there was a plot that was foiled, a radical plot that was foiled. And at about the same time, then we had Butler County, Ohio Sheriff Richard Jones saying that he got information that terror attacks were coming to the U.S., and he was going to put automatic weapons in his deputies' cars. So this is an alert. Again, today, Newsday had the headline, June 4th, German authorities see Islamic extremist motive in Mannheim knife attack. Now, we go back because our Northeast contact also pointed Lou toward this ongoing alert exigency around San Diego. And Lou, the mathematician, had his mind blown, didn't you, Lou?
I sure did. This is entitled, Surge in Chinese Migrants Via Mexico, Great Wave of China. This is from the New York Post, May 25th of this year. And it at just above the article, it has a little bar graph. And at first, I didn't think too much of it because two of the bars look almost pretty much the same. And then I looked at the little bar at the top. Now, the little one at the top is a tiny little bar.
They're red, aren't they?
They're red.
They're red, like they're showing how things increase or diminish.
Yeah. The length of the bar is a good visual way to digest the size of the numbers. Well, this shows the number of Chinese crossing the border. The first one is from October 1st, 2021, to September 30th, 2022, so one full year. And it's a tiny little bar, and the number next to it is 342. Keep that in the back of your mind, 342.
And that's Chinese humans crossing illegally.
That's right. And then we go to the next year, October 1st, 2022, to September 30th, 2023. Now, we suddenly have this long bar, and it is 24,000.
Lou, recap that. What, the first year was 300 and what?
342.
Now we go
And in 1 year, it jumps to 24,000.
What about what percentage was that?
Well, just doing a ballpark estimate, it appears to be maybe about seven times as much, which would be 700%.
And then here comes the clincher.
And then we come to October 1st, 2023, to May 2024. Now, the first thing to notice there is that's not even a whole year yet. That's maybe two-thirds of a year. Let's see, October to May. October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May. That's two-thirds of a year. Already, the count is at 30,000. Now, if we extrapolate and do a little fast arithmetic, if I can do that in my head, we would expect it, if it continues in that rate, by the end of the calendar, well, not a calendar year, but the end of the year they're talking about, we would expect about another half. It would be 45,000, almost double last year.
And Lou, you told me when I asked you what percent increase was there from that lowest number, the 300 and something, to the highest number that we've just had.
And you know what? I've forgotten what.
You know what? I know what you told me. You said 6,000%.
Sounds about right. In other words, 60 times.
Our listeners, are you listening, listeners? Are we at a time that isn't like any other time in our history? It certainly seems like it.
Does anybody really think that that is just due to, just a bunch of Chinese deciding they like it here in the U.S. better? No. They have to come over to, you know, the Western Hemisphere somehow. They can't walk. They've got to have transportation to get there, probably by plane, probably sponsored by the Chinese government, I would think.
Get into your article now. There's a little bit in there that's interesting, too.
Yes, we've got some of the highlights. And it says the majority of Chinese migrants are entering through the San Diego border region, where agents have been completely overwhelmed by the massive influx. And many also destroy or discard, this is interesting, many also destroy or discard their passports or ID cards on the Mexican side of the border, making it much harder for CBP to verify their identity in the country of origin, making deporting them more difficult. And then it talks a little bit about security concerns. Here are a few of the highlights. The influx of Chinese nationals also raises security fears, as the country's government is known to aggressively infiltrate the U.S. And here we have a quote from Patrick J. Lechleitner, who is the acting Immigration and Customs Enforcement Chief. He says, it does raise concerns who these individuals are and what they're doing, unquote. And then on March 30th, a removal flight with a capacity to carry just 14 passengers landed in Shenyang, China, according to Thomas Cartwright, a witness at the border. Now get that. The number coming in just 8 months was 30,000. The number going back was 14. That's pretty impressive.
It is. It's absurd, and it's a token. And who was the New York Post writer who had that article?
Let me see now. Jenny Taer, T-A-E-R.
Okay. I think that in her article, I gave it a quick scan, too. They were talking about some of these people who had already gotten here, the Chinese, and they were, quote, taxi drivers. And they supposedly were going to help some of the others who came who couldn't speak English. And, you know, they'd take them around and help them get all the benefits they needed. But someone else said they questioned this. Are we really getting just taxi drivers? Or who are we getting? You know, you and I have to think the military-age men quotient is the big one, isn't it, Lou?
Yeah. You look at a picture they have here. They have a very good picture of some of the Chinese nationals crossing the southern border. All men, as far as I can see. I don't see any women. And maybe one out of about 20.
Very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
Well, we are very pleased to be coming to you, listeners, on these venues that Lou has mentioned. And some of them, you will have to go to their websites and get their schedule to see when you can hear our programs. But you know you can hear us on WWCR. It's so important that you tell others about our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. You know, Jesus told us that we have to work because the night is coming. The night may be coming when we will not be able to broadcast. We have heard there, whatever you think about Alex Jones, there have been efforts to close him down, actually close him down. And we were impressed that Roger Stone and General Michael Flynn were backing Alex Jones on this. We don't want to lose our First Amendment rights. We don't want to go into the true Stalinist gulag, but we wonder whether we're going there. And then, Lou, I think that's all you have, isn't it?
That's all on that topic.
Yes.
Then I have some other things.
But you have those first two articles, don't you?
I do, yes.
And I think you've completed them?
Yes,
correct?
I have, yeah.
And then I think you go next to me.
Okay.
I believe so. And I have to mention here that we've had a lot of response from you listeners about Farmer Jack's article about some of the deleterious effects of pork. And if some of you didn't get to hear that and you want a copy of it, you could write to us. And we do need some support, especially we need checks to Global Star Communications. You can write, or if you can send some cash or some help to Lou and me, we do need some help. And that is Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And we do hope that some of you will write asking for our book. And you can just say, please send me your new book. If you can put in a few $1 bills or a $5 bill for postage, it would be great. If you can't, do not worry. Our main thing is to get the book out while the night is not here yet. We must get the book out so there's a record that your children, your grandchildren will have. So please, this book is essentially free. We hope that we will get 10, 15, 20 requests this week. Write to Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And the listener that we're going to talk about wrote a very interesting note about the pork article, and she said, back in the 80s, my children had various skin infections from climbing on the fence. Now, what I didn't tell you was she says she was a pig farmer. So those were pigs beyond the fences. My mom told me how unclean the pigs were and to always wash up after being around them. But she still ate pig, as we did. But I have learned the truth, and I have repented of pig farming and eating the unclean. I follow God's rules for eating now. I have goats now. I'm in my 70s. I try to stay healthy and walk every day. And she said, blessings to us. The police state interfered with her letter, a donation to us. So this very astute, good, repentant woman just sent the money directly to WWCR. So we are very thankful. You know, God makes a way. God is watching over his remnant. And so now I believe that I go right on. Well, what's your first your letter that you have, Lou?
I have a couple of short ones here. The first one is breaking news. China State Television declares.
But what, you have something on the end. I have F. Do you have anything before that?
I have A.
Oh, yes. Why don't you give yours, and then I'll hook right in.
All right. Again, this is breaking news. China State Television declares we'll take Taiwan in early June.
This is your WW3 set of alerts, isn't it?
Yes, that is. That's just right.
Yes,
yes. And this was from Hal Turner Radio. And it's we just have the short headline here. Video below shows Chinese state TV declaring today that China will reclaim Taiwan early in June, likely in early June. It has begun preparing the Chinese public for coming war and possible political sanctions and isolation. Then we go to breaking news, China. The Japanese people will be dragged into a fiery hell. Again, from Hal Turner. Chinese ambassador to Japan, Wu Jianghao, today publicly announced the Japanese, and this is a quote, the Japanese people will be dragged into a fiery hell, unquote, after Japan pledged support to Taiwan. The ambassador has already been summoned to the Taiwan foreign minister. And here we have Hal Turner, snap analysis. Wow. That language is so unusual as to be completely unknown, coming from any China official. Seems as though old animosities are resurfacing in Asia. And this is Lou speaking, just to insert that before and during World War II, because the Japanese did some terrible things to the Chinese. So I think that's what Hal Turner is referring to there. Now, we have not just Taiwan, China lusting after the Philippines as well. This is by J.M. Phelps, and this was what from WorldNetDaily.com on May 25th.
And via Brother Bruce of
yes.
American Prophecy, we value his input a lot.
We sure do. He's been very good to us in giving us some very useful information. And it says, although China's designs and world domination caused many people to focus on the communist superpower's lust for, quote, reunification, unquote, with Taiwan. It turns out the Philippines, just a few hundred miles due south of Taiwan, are also increasingly in China's crosshairs. Earlier this month, the Marcos-led government approved a massive $35 billion grant to the Philippine Navy as part of its Armed Forces of the Philippines modernization budget, as PhilStar Global reported. And then we have member of British Parliament, quote, "We are already at war with Russia. They won't tell the people until July or August," unquote. Once more from Hal Turner, May 24th. Video below shows British Member of Parliament Andrew Bridgen confirming on a radio show today, quote, "We are actually at war with Russia now. They're not going to tell the people, probably, until July or August, maybe later. The whole thing's a pantomime in Parliament. It's not a race between the blue and the red team to see who crosses the finish line. This is a baton handover on all the big issues. Net zero, COVID response, the WHO, the trans agenda," unquote. And the last of this group, NATO preparing for war with Russia. That's from Orban. Hungary, and this, by the way, was from www.rt.com. And the date was May 25th. Hungary is reassessing its role within the bloc as it has no wish to take part in a conflict against Moscow, the PM has said. Hungary is re-evaluating its role in NATO as it has no intention of taking part in actions that could involve member states and the Ukraine conflict and lead to a direct clash with Russia, Prime Minister Viktor Orban said on Friday. Speaking on local Kossuth radio, Orban stated that his country has already been relegated to the role of a non-participant within the U.S.-led military bloc due to its stance on Ukraine. And Budapest is now working on legal ways to retain its membership, but reserve the right to abstain from joining NATO operations it disagrees with. Quote, "Hungary's position must be redefined. Our lawyers and officials are working on ways to allow Hungary to continue to exist as a NATO member without participating in NATO activities outside the bloc's territory. We need to create a new approach, a new definition of our position as a pro-peace force within NATO," Orban said. And this is Lou speaking. This sounds to me like a man with good common sense, a real statesman for his country. Wish there were more like him.
That's for sure, Lou. And now more Blitzkrieg headlines. And this is from By Around the Web, May 23rd. State to mandate climate brainwashing for students. Children already being bombarded with global warming hysteria. This is WorldNetDaily.com, but it also was on By Around the Web. The Washington Standard, with the United Nations and other powerful international players demanding more, government schools across Illinois will soon be required to indoctrinate every student with man-made climate change propaganda. But despite a brouhaha about the scheme, children across the state are already being bombarded with global warming hysteria. The new mandate is included in legislation that has already cleared virtually every hurdle on the route to becoming law. Then next we have WEF, and of course that's the World Economic Forum, orders governments to arrest citizens who oppose man-made climate change narrative. This was the People's Voice, May 22nd. The World Economic Forum has ordered governments to begin arresting citizens who go against or oppose the man-made climate change narrative in a bid to persuade the masses that, quote, global boiling is a real danger.
And then, globalists launched new attack on food supply, threatened to destroy farming worldwide, by Frank Bergman. And this was from SlayNews.com. The date was May 25th, 2024. Unelected bureaucratic globalists have launched a new attack in the escalating war on food in a move that puts the global farming industry at risk of destruction. The move seeks to force farmers into complying with the increasingly unachievable goals of the World Economic Forum's, WEF's, net zero agenda. The WEF, the United Nations, and other globalist interests claim that farming, so-called emissions, are contributing to the alleged climate crisis. As a result, they are pushing to decimate the global farming industry, putting the worldwide food supply at risk. Meanwhile, the WEF and its allies are demanding that governments ban traditional meat and dairy products and replace them with synthetic, plant-derived, and insect-based foods.
Lou, also, there is the chemtrail situation. You and I have been documenting it here since I wrote my books, and they were published in 2004, Patriot's Warning, Chaos and Chemtrails. And I think now it has gotten to the point there is so much barium and aluminum in the soil that the food is almost inedible. Last year, locally, we tried to eat some corn, and we got it once or twice. And then after heavy spraying most of the summer, we had to throw away the last part. And you just recently got strawberries that were usually utterly delicious here from the fields in the county we live in Maryland. We couldn't eat them, and we didn't want to. It was like a dose of some kind of heavy metal. We had to pitch them. So this must stop. This must stop, and we must make our voices heard again, and all of you, right now. Just like Hawk always advises you, go get some Denny Moore beef stew, some soups, we advise you to get canned vegetables. If possible, get canned organic peas, green beans, corn. You see, you won't have the GMOs, and it'll last a long time. Lou and I one time had a can of Indian pudding, and it was from that wonderful place called Walnut Acres that Paul Keene had. He was one of the pioneers in natural foods, and he had natural peas growing them every year. But we think that this can of Indian pudding was probably 14 years old, and it was perfect. We opened it, and we could eat it. So meats will keep a long time, so will vegetables, but fruit, the cans will blow up. We had experiences with that. So now we move right on in our headlines. We have, and now this is the People's Voice, May 23rd, Pfizer and Moderna stock explodes after bird flu cases reported in U.S. and Australia. Shares of big pharma companies, including Moderna and Pfizer, exploded on Wednesday following two reports of human bird flu infections, one in the U.S., and another in Australia. Oh, we have the hype going, and then we have to get this headline, government stockpiling vaccines ahead of pre-election pandemic. Note that word, pre-election pandemic, that phrase, rather. This is from newsaddicts.com, May 27th. President Joe Biden's administration has begun stockpiling mRNA vaccines in preparation for a bird flu pandemic to be unleashed ahead of the November presidential election. Scientists have just announced that they have developed an experimental vaccine that will soon be rolled out as part of a mass vaccination campaign.
And now, I think...
Oh, I believe I have another one. I have another one yet, don't I? British MP, yes, who pushed COVID vaccines on public, undergoes quadruple amputation after hands and feet turned black. This is so sad. This was May the 25th, the People's Voice. And, you know, listeners, I look at his before and after pictures. The before, he had his arms, and he looked like he was probably sitting at a desk, probably making his statements how wonderful the vaccines were. He didn't look like an evil man. He looked like an ordinary person who had been duped. The second picture is rather dreadful. Let's put it that way. Fully vaccinated British lawmaker Craig McKinley has undergone quadruple amputation surgery after his immune system was unable to deal with an infection causing an extremely rare, and that's in quotes, reaction, which turned his hands and feet black and his body, quote, a very strange shade of blue. Okay, there we have it. We've got to lock ourselves down and be ready spiritually for whatever they're going to try. Okay, and we hope and pray that those congressional members who were looking into the USDA, working with the secret lab in China, to rev up the gain of function of the bird flu. We hope that it's going to come out, and the spotlight of truth will spoil this. And we pray to God that that will happen. And now I think I begin, don't I? You don't have anything more to add?
No, I don't think I do.
No. And here we now go to this important article, The Four Stages of Ideological Subversion. And this came out of naturalnews.com actually almost 4 years ago to the day, Monday, June 8th, 2020. And they had picked up an article from Breitbart.com, and it was written by John Hayward, capital H-A-Y-W-A-R-D. Progressive ideology always rests on a conviction that the current, quote, regressive system is comprehensively unjust and must be destroyed by exploiting its weaknesses. Or, no, excuse me, exploiting its weaknesses. The most famous proponent of such tactics in recent years has been the late Saul Alinsky, the intellectual godfather of the modern Democrat Party. But former Soviet journalist and KGB informant Yuri Bezmenov had laid out an even more concise strategy for subversion in a 1984 interview. Alinsky's seminal book specified 13 rules for radicals. And we have to interject there, that was Hillary's big hero. But Bezmenov had only four, quote, stages of ideological subversion, end of quote. And they will sound very familiar to anyone following the current wave of left-wing riots or the politicized final stages of the coronavirus panic before it. And these are the stages: demoralization, destabilization, crisis, and normalization. Bezmenov defined ideological subversion, or, quote, active measures, as the KGB preferred to call it, as a, quote, slow brainwashing process, end of quote, to, quote, change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite their abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interest of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. We have to interject here. Yes, this is the reprobate mind. This is the sin that has overtaken us. This is the cowardice in the churches. This is the actual evil of those leading clergymen who advised their flock to take the aborted fetal-derived COVID shots. So stage one here we have of John Hayward's ideas, demoralization. Bezmenov, and of course we're now getting right in to the other person who had the theory besides Alinsky. And again, this is the former Soviet a journalist and KGB informant, Yuri Bezmenov. Bezmenov said the first stage, demoralization, could take 15 to 20 years to complete because, quote, this is the minimum number of years it takes to educate one generation of students.
Marxist-Leninist, and this is a quote, Marxist-Leninist ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism, he warned in 1984, judging that the demoralization process had been, quote, basically completed, unquote, by that point. And he went on to say, actually, it's overfulfilled, because demoralization now reaches such areas where previously not even Comrade Andropov and all of his experts would even dream of such tremendous success. He added, referring to former KGB head and Soviet leader Yuri Andropov. And he went on to say, most of it is done by Americans to Americans, thanks to a lack of moral standards, unquote. Bezmenov explained that demoralization is important because it robs the targeted population of its ability to process valid information. Even when demoralization targets, quote, showered with authentic proof, unquote, of contrary positions, they simply refuse to believe it. Demoralization is quite obvious among today's young people whose faith in that country has been systematically destroyed throughout their lives by the education and media establishment. To take a recent high-profile example, the New York Times fraudulent 1619 Project argued that American history actually began with the arrival of black slaves in North America, and the Revolutionary War was fought by the colonists to preserve slavery. Although comprehensively debunked by actual historians, and even the original author has admitted her core thesis was not true, the 1619 Project is now part of some school curricula. Another word for demoralization is guilt. Americans are routinely compelled to feel guilt about their society and national history. Guilt is the most powerful force in left-wing politics and academia. People will not accept the radical expansion of punitive government power unless they feel guilty and deserving of punishment. Stage 2. Destabilization. The second stage, destabilization, is much faster, requiring only 2 to 5 years under KGB doctrine. In this stage, the fundamentals of the targeted population's economy, political system, and culture would be attacked, while the demoralized population could not mount much of a defense. Bezmenov, in 1984, found it, quote, absolutely fantastic, unquote, how much influence Marxist-Leninist ideas had developed in the American economy and military. In essence, the demoralized population becomes willing to believe the worst criticisms of its own society, while learning to see defenders of that society as their enemies, while avowed enemies become natural allies. The defenders are held to strict standards, while anything goes for the most strident critics. Whatever Bezmenov saw in the destabilized American society of the early 1980s with respect to the Soviet Union, it's easy to see how the American left has destabilized entire segments of modern society after demoralizing them. They see enemies everywhere, while no pro-American authority can be trusted. It's hard to imagine a better illustration of demoralization followed by destabilization than hordes of anti-capitalist activists texting each other on their iPhones. Not coincidentally, hostile foreign powers like communist China and Iran are reaching out to destabilize American communities and offering themselves as guides and allies. Their sales pitches aren't exactly smooth, but they're definitely making an effort. A destabilized population becomes obsessed with hypocrisy as the ultimate political sin. They believe the best ideas, individual liberty, sovereign rights, capitalism, even the rule of law, are presented insincerely by sinister powers who seek to exploit and manipulate them. The precious resources of goodwill disappears from society as everyone comes to believe their neighbors hate them and cannot be trusted. Demoralized people lose faith in their nation, history, and ideals. Destabilized people lose faith in each other.
And we can interject there now in what was written in 2020 about the idea that as this Marxist takeover occurs, the people who are defending America are looked at as the enemy, and the ones who are destabilizing it are looked at as the saviors. And the January 6th prisoner lockup is a very, very good example of this, and how far the totalitarian gulag and complete prison in America has progressed since the author wrote this. In fact, the next stage is crisis, and I believe we're in a crisis now with that January lockup, January 6th lockup, and with a former president being convicted. So here we have part three, stage three. Once a society has been destabilized, Bezmenov said the time would be ripe to create a crisis, which he has estimated would take 6 to 8 weeks in the 80s. With turbo internet speed, the modern era can punch out a crisis much faster than that. A crisis has the obvious benefit of panicking, demoralized, destabilized people into abandoning their legal protections and constitutional ideals. During the coronavirus panic, people who brought up those ideals were treated like lunatics. The pendulum swung the other way with blinding speed during the riots. in the span of 1 week, the right to peaceably assemble went from a crazed defiance of common sense lockdown rules to an urgent matter that utterly transcended the deadly pandemic. Suddenly, angry political demonstrations magically cured the coronavirus or made the projected wave of sickness and death into a purely secondary concern. If you wanted to work at the store so you could feed your family in late March, you were selfishly trying to kill my grandma to pad your bank account. If you wanted to burn the store down in early June to protest white supremacy, nobody mentioned their imperiled grandmothers. The more subtle benefit of a crisis is that it tends to delegitimize aspects of the existing system that have already been softened up by the long process of demoralization and destabilization. Those who control the organs of public communication have the power to decide which aspects of the system are supposedly indicted by the crisis. For example, the dominant media left will not discuss the failures of left-wing mayors and governors. On the contrary, the pandemic was used to attack the competence of Republican governors who turned out to be entirely correct in their actions, as in Florida and Georgia. During the riots, the media was completely uninterested in discussing the incompetence of left-wing officials who allowed violence to rage out of control with deadly consequences. Somehow, the lesson of wanton violence that killed people and destroyed countless livelihoods became, quote, let's get rid of the police altogether. And now this is Elizabeth again interjecting that, sadly, when great patriots like Mike Lindell of MyPillow and General Michael Flynn and General McInerney went in to talk to Trump or contacted him. We know that Mike Lindell actually went to speak with him. They wanted him to invoke the surveillance.
Insurrection, I believe.
Yes, the Insurrection Act, because of all these raging riots in the leftist states, and nothing happened. Here we have to realize that much of politics is that theater. Dr. Dennis Cuddy brought it out in his books. The elite plan, usually, to have a Republican president, then they alternate with a Democrat. We know that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, when the Bilderbergers were meeting in Chantilly, Virginia, before Obama's first term, they were taken on an airplane, and they were told that Hillary didn't have her chance yet, that Barack would be president. So we know about how the election of 2020 was completely overturned, and we can hear the evil ones that we're talking about in this article. They're saying that that's a farce, even though millions of Americans saw on television the hidden ballots and everything, the trunks and everything under the tables. But you see, we're at a fur distance now, listeners. We're getting deeper into the crisis. So Bezmenov says the threat of a crisis is essential for terrorizing the middle class into accepting a political agenda that is actively hostile to its interests, which leads to the fourth stage of subversion. The offer to make the pain and fear go away by accepting political domination.
Stage 4, normalization. Quote, after a crisis with a violent change of the power structure and economy, you have a so-called period of normalization that may last indefinitely, Bezmenov said, arriving at the fourth stage of subversion. He explained, normalization is a cynical expression borrowed from Soviet propaganda. Interestingly, it also happens to be the core theme of the 2020 Democrat presidential campaign. And here we have a quote. When the Soviet tanks moved into Czechoslovakia in 1968, Comrade Brezhnev said, now the situation in brotherly Czechoslovakia is normalized. This is what will happen in the United States if you allow all the schmucks to bring the country to crisis, to promise people all kinds of goodies and a paradise on earth, to destabilize your economy, to eliminate the principle of free market competition, and to put a big brother government in Washington, D.C., with benevolent dictators like Walter Mondale, who will promise lots of things, never mind whether the promises are fulfillable or not, Bezmenov cautioned. As things turned out, Walter Mondale never got his chance to be a benevolent dictator. And to some extent, Bezmenov's fourth-step model of subversion could be applied to almost any political campaign. They almost all begin with telling voters things are awful, crises have erupted, and normality can be restored only by voting for the challenger, or preserved only by voting for the incumbent. Bezmenov, however, was insistent that American left-wing professors and civil rights leaders were deliberately running Andropov's strategy with a conscious effort to achieve destabilization, the step that truly distinguishes ideological subversion from the usual promises to put a chicken in every pot. He said, quote, "They are instrumental in the process of subversion only to destabilize a nation," he said of the academics and activists. "When their job is completed, they are not needed anymore. They know too much. Some of them, when they get disillusioned, when they see that the Marxist-Leninists come to power, obviously they get offended. They think they will come to power. That will never happen, of course. They will be lined up against the wall and shot." And this is Lou speaking. It looks like we're well on the way.
Yes, it does. Lou, what are the four stages again?
Well, now you have the first one.
I have the first one, which is demoralization.
Then destabilization.
Then I have crisis.
And normalization.
And normalization. We are in very deep doo-doo. Now, tonight, we did not get to move into the April sacrifice part of our program. The next time we are on, we will be getting into that. There's a great deal that we have to get into. But again, we want to remind you that if you have not heard Deborah Tavares' groundbreaking warnings to all of us citizens, you do need to tune in tomorrow night to our program and hear that. And I think now we will be keeping a lot of very important things that we will have ready for you next Wednesday. We do hear one good voice here. It was May 9th from the People's Voice. "President Putin, I will stop the New World Order from sparking World War III. I hope to God that this is sincere, that he's not putting his submarines right off the coast of California and the East Coast in readiness to link up with China. I hope this is sincere. Russia will do everything in its power to prevent the New World Order from sparking World War III, President Vladimir Putin pledged in his address to the Victory Day military parade in Moscow. At the event celebrating the 79th anniversary of victory over Nazi Germany, Putin declared that the Russian military is, quote, always on alert and ready to defend the country's sovereignty. Quote, the West would like to forget the lessons of World War II, but we remember that the fate of humanity was decided in grandiose battles near Moscow and Leningrad, end of quote, as well as other cities, Putin said. Lou, you're the historian. Let's interject here for a minute. How did that happen? How did Russia overcome Germany, the Nazis?
Well, it was a very close thing. The Germans got together the biggest army in the world in history up to that time and invaded Russia. And it was a sneak attack, by the way. They made no declaration of war. Hitler just decided, you know, the Russians were subhumans. They were against civilization, and he was going to defeat them. So he had huge armies that went into Western Russia, in those days, of course, it was the Soviet Union, and he managed to get almost to Moscow. In fact, what saved the Russians was, first of all, the huge landmass of their country, and then the fact that some historians doubt this, but there was a small revolt in Yugoslavia. They put in a coup and took out the man who was pro-Hitler and put in a more democratic person in charge of the country, And Hitler diverted some of the energy that he was going to use for the Soviet Union invasion for this Yugoslavian campaign.
So that played a role. And didn't the weather, the dire winter weather, quickly?
And that's what's important, because that slowed down the German armies just enough that they were actually, I think some of the scouts ahead were in sight of the Kremlin.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
And when the snows came and the sub-freezing weather, the tanks.
So God may have played a role, too.
He may have.
So these grandiose battles were real.
And then in Leningrad, there was a siege. I think there was a book written by Harrison Salisbury many years ago. I never read it. Called The 900 Days, The Siege of Leningrad. And Leningrad was in terrible shape. Leningrad, of course, was a city founded by Peter the Great called St. Petersburg. But after the Soviets took over, it was renamed Leningrad after Lenin. And now, of course, it's back to St. Petersburg. They've rechanged the name back to its traditional name. But the Germans surrounded the city, and for a long time, the people of Leningrad barely hung on. But it's estimated that Russia lost probably 30 million people in World War II, by far the biggest losses of any country.
Thank you for that, Lou. That's very, very important for us to know this background, why Putin and his countrymen would love their freedom, too. Infowars.com reports the president, and that was Putin, emphasized that Russia, quote, is experiencing a difficult milestone period, end of quote, in its history, noting that the fate of the country depends on every Russian. Quote, we celebrate this victory day in the conditions of the special military operation. All its participants, those who are on the front lines, they are our heroes. We bow to their perseverance and sacrifice. All of Russia is with you, Putin stated. The Russian leader stressed that the country remembers all those who lost lives while fighting Nazism and those who were killed during the Ukraine conflict. He commemorated them with a minute of silence. The president's speech ended in the traditional manner with cannon blasts and the Russian national anthem. And he also said, we will ensure a free, safe future for Russia. So military parades and other events celebrating Victory Day were taking place in 300 cities across Russia. And so we can see the love of the country and the remembrance of the portraits of their relatives who fought the Nazis during the war. So we must pray for Putin's heart. Let it be pure before God. Let him stop the new world order that wants to push NATO into Russia. Good night.